Whatever we call them, U.S. armed forces are now have the job of defeating the militants in Iraq and Syria, while at the same time defending the home front and keeping an eye on Russia and China, and deploying 3,000 troops to West Africa to join the fight against the Ebola virus. President Obama said yesterday that the U.S. military not only protects the United States, it also helps people around the world, which got us thinking, just what is the purpose of the U.S. military in 2014? John Arquilla spends a lot of time thinking about such big questions. He's a professor of defense analysis at the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, California, and he reckons there's some confusion.
The effectiveness of the American military is in many ways determined by the strategy set at the highest levels of government. And here we've had a bit of a problem over the last decade. There's always been a pull between doing things for idealistic reasons and doing them for more pragmatic reasons, strategic interest versus moral or ethical impulse. And in 2003, President George W. Bush decided that he could square this circle by doing good and doing well, placing a democracy in Iraq and hoping that that would have an effect of transforming the Middle East. And what we found was that that democracy project ran against the history and culture of Iraq, and that in fact we did transform this part of the world, but not in the way we'd intended. So we're looking at a sea of troubles, largely of our own creation. The military did well to tamp down the insurgency in Iraq, but when President Obama decided simply to leave at the end of 2011, the cork came out of the bottle and trouble arose again. Our ethical impulse to try to spread democracy to Syria, calling for the overthrow of Bashar Assad, has not been backed by any action to actually remove him from power. So a civil war has festered. I think the military is handling matters reasonably well, but it's higher policy that will determine its ultimate success or failure.
Yeah. So what challenges has the Obama administration faced as it's tried to kind of bend that democracy-building project back into, well, I mean, they were also trying, as you say, thinking about it in Syria, but now where is it all at?
Well, I think President Obama, whose instincts are idealistic, has become far more a realist. For example, when the military overthrew the democratically elected government in Egypt, he was quite understanding of their need to do this. I think that he is, on the one hand, a sort of cool and unflappable strategist. At the same time, he's an embattled politician. And I think the actions of this week in Congress reflect the highly politicized nature of the discourse. And he's trying to thread that needle, for the most part doing well. I think if there is to be something called an Obama doctrine, it is a doctrine of economy of force. And this, I think, is very, very wise for our time. I think, to some extent, the legacy of the last decade in Iraq continues to plague President Obama. But the overall doctrine of doing more with less of our own assets is a very wise one.
Explain for me what you mean by President Obama's economy of force.
When I talk about an economy of force, what I'm referring to is a direct response to the Powell Doctrine of overwhelming force. The Colin Powell Doctrine is throw so many troops at some intervention that there's no doubt about how it's going to turn out. That's why we sent over 500,000 troops to Operation Desert Storm. Probably didn't need even half that number, but overawing the opponent as well as outfighting him. That's the goal of that doctrine. We can't afford to do that, and in an age of irregular warfare, it's not particularly efficient. So President Obama, who I think has a full grasp of this growing power of small groups, says, well, why don't we operate in that way? Why don't we leverage those areas of comparative advantage we have to help make our allies operate even better in the field?
Are you hopeful that this economy of force strategy will work to reestablish the kind of direction and the path of the U.S. military?
Oh, I think it is absolutely essential that we move in this direction. What we know is that a military comprised of a few large things is expensive and not particularly efficient. It's a very scaled-up traditional military that has had trouble scaling down to deal with insurgents. If we transform the military to one that's already scaled down into a lot of little things, then if we ever do have to scale it up again, it's a lot easier to do that. To take something big and bulky and make it nimble is hard. To take something nimble and mass it together, or as I like the term, swarm, to swarm our opponents is a lot easier. And I think that's the direction we're clearly moving in. The debate remains lively, but it seems that we're bending the arc of military history toward the small, the many, the nimble, and the networked.
Don't we still need, like, you know, big carrier groups to keep countries like China in check?
Well, I don't know that carriers have ever done a very good job of intimidating others. They certainly didn't stop Saddam Hussein from invading Kuwait or North Vietnam from invading the South or North Korea from invading South Korea. And the fact that the Chinese were able to put a submarine within fairly close range to one of our carriers some time back is, of course, troubling. The aircraft carrier is sort of an example of the few and the large military. We need a lot of little things. The Chinese Navy, for example, is made up of many hundreds of torpedo and missile boats. They have an old Ukrainian carrier that they've managed to get steam up on, but they're really about using these sorts of swarm tactics against us, as are other adversaries, potential adversaries like North Korea and Iran. So I'm somebody who believes that, you know, take the numbers off those carriers and just put bullseyes on them. In an age of accurate weapons, it's going to be harder and harder for them to function. And our adversaries know that.
Wow. So for the people in our audience who are hearing this and thinking, no more billion-dollar battleships, that money can be put into schools, are they right, or is that not the way it's going to work?
I think this vision of a nimbler and more networked military can lead to very significant reductions in defense spending, and I think that it's a very beneficial sort of thing strategically as well as economically.
John Arquilla at the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, California, thanks so much for your thoughts.
Oh, thank you, Marco.